Begin the current daf and start the Bamatziya daf Kav Hei. Begin on the bottom line of the Kav Dalman Beis, where the Gemara continues in a related discussion from the previous daf. And that is, the Gemara had segued from the topic of this parak regarding Hamakabel Sad Mechaveroi, which talks about a relationship, the business deal that there is between the owner and the sharecropper, which they share the profits. So in a related vein, the Gemara spoke about Iska, which the Nahar Doi had explained that the Iska, which was talking about the loss part. Today we're going to speak about the gain part, which is very relative to the halachas we learned in Perek Ezu Neshech regarding the problems of ribis, which is that half of the merchandise, where there's someone that owns merchandise, it gives it to someone else who does the job of selling it in other places where it's more expensive, that they can make a profit. That profit is going to be split. The merchandise is viewed as 50-50. Half of the merchandise is viewed as a deposit, which that's owned by the owner, and half of it is viewed as a loan. Therefore, when, let's say, all of it is lost, half of it is a loss to the owner, half of it is lost to the worker. Now, on that, the Rava had qualified certain halachas regarding the iska, how we view it, that it has to be used just in the context of the iska. Amar Rava. Rava said another halacha relating to the halachas of this iska. He says, Chada iska betray shtari. If, let's say, in actuality, it's one iska, it's one business deal, but they write it and they split it into two different documents, and that says Rava, that's pseida de malva. That will cause a loss, possibly, for the lender. The reason is as follows. Generally, an iska, this business deal, which someone is really lending someone something, but it's not a loan, that's what we usually use a heter iska for in that situation, where it ends up being like a business deal. This guy's providing, whether it be money, or merchandise, whatever it is, half of it is going to be, as we explained, the loan, half of it is going to be a deposit, meaning owned by the individual that provided. Now, additionally, and generally in iska, a third of the profit margin, only a third, goes to the owner, and half of the loss goes to him. So in regards to losses, he gets half. But in regards to the profit margin, he only gets a third. Now the reason for this is, the Gemara says, Nezu Neshach, and Afsam Chesem Abeis, as we find the same idea by these shtara, the documents of Rav Elish, that the provider only gets a third. Now the reason for that is because if not, if he's going to get half the profits, there's going to have the appearance of ribis, of lending money and interest. Why? Because since we explained before that half the money is a deposit and half the money is a loan, if not for the worker taking some of the profits of the half, which is the deposit, it's going to come out that the effort that he's working, because he's not only working for his half, which is the loan part, he's also working and investing the other half, which is the owner's half, which is the deposit, that working that he's doing, that's effort. That is ribis, because you're giving him something more than what you took from him, of the loan, of the halva. So therefore, the way that the general iska is to allow this, that it shouldn't be a problem about ribis, is that he doesn't give him back his full half of the profits of his part of the begotten, and that is the worker takes off some of that as a payment for the work that he's doing for the half that's deposited, so there's no problem about ribis, because that work is being compensated for, and then they could give him back his half of the loan, and his half, and his part of the deposit, which is part of the principal, and then they share the profits, what's remaining. So therefore, since we have that premise that the owner, the one who is providing the iska, he gets only a third of the profits, but he takes half of the loss, so as follows. If this owner is providing merchandise, two bundles of garments, for a sum total of a mana, of 100. Now, what Rav is basically saying is that they should write a document, one document, of $100, let's say. Because if, let's say, the following scenario unfolds. Let's say one of the bundles of the garments actually suffers a loss of principal. From 50, because there's two bundles, each bundle is 50 for a sum total of 100. Let's say from the 50 that it was worth, it actually got diminished 5 dinar. That's one bundle. Now, the other bundle actually had a profit margin of 15 dinar. Now, if it's one document, we view it as one iska, which really it is, it was really one business deal, just two bundles that he gave him. So then you don't calculate the one, the loss itself and the gain itself. Rather, you view the whole sale, the whole merchandise, as one big profit and loss, which comes out for a total, if you have a gain of 15 and a loss of 5, is a sum total of a gain of 10. Now, from that 10, so the owner takes a third, as we said. That's how they would do the heter iska, that it shouldn't be a problem about ribis. Which that comes for a total of, he walks away, besides the principal getting that back, he walks away for a profit of 3 1/3 dinar. Whereas the worker gets he gets 2/3 of that, which are six, the 6 2/3. Now, however, what Rav is saying is, if they write two documents, which is that each bundle has its own document of $50, so it comes out each one is going to be calculated on its own. So it comes out that the lender will take a loss of half, as we said, that half of it is considered pekod and half as a milva, which from the one that had the loss of 5, which had a principal of 50, it actually didn't have a profit, actually had a loss, it was only sold for, let's say, 45, he's going to take half the loss, which is he's going to have to lose 2.5 dinar. Now, regard to the gain of the other one, which was a gain of 15, as we said before, he only takes 1/3 of the profit, so it's going to come out that he's only going to be taking for his profit 30 ma, which are 5 dinar, meaning out of 15, he's going to take 1/3, which is 5. Because a dinar, as Rashi says, are 6 silver ma, which is essentially he's going to be walking away with a loss more than had it been in one document. Because he's going to be left with 2.5 dinar. Because since he's losing in one, 2.5, and he's gaining in one, 5, so 5 minus 2.5, you're left with 2.5. But as we illustrated before, if he did in one document, he'd be walking away with 3 1/3. So therefore, says Rava, since essentially it's really one iska, but if it's going to be split into two documents, that's going to be a loss of the lender, of the owner of the merchandise. Whereas as you continue on top of Kofayim and Aleph, let's say it's trei iski. Let's say in reality it's really two different types of business deals that he's doing with him, because they were on two different days. Today he received from him $100 worth, and the next day he received another $100 worth, a different operation. But if a chad shtara, if they're going to write it into one document regarding that it's an iska on 200, that's going to be paid to the labor. That's going to be a loss of the borrower, as we explained. Because if you're going to have a loss in one and a gain in the other one, so you're not going to calculate it all as one. Rather, it's actually going to turn out that the gain is going to complement the principal. I mean, if you write into one document, so we said we're going to calculate it all as once, and then you're going to split what's left over. But if you write into two documents, so then you're going to calculate each one separately, and then the owner is going to, as we said before, is going to take more of a loss, because by loss he takes half, whereas regards to returns, regarding profit, he only takes 1/3. So what's Rava coming to say? So he's just saying good counsel, which is that if it really is one iska, then write one document, because then, rightfully so, the one who's supposed to gain, which is the lender, will gain. But if it's two iske, then write two documents so that it's fair that the leiva, who really is two iske, that he shouldn't lose, because else he's going to lose. So that's what Rava illustrates in regards to this halacha of iske. V'amar Rava, another halacha of Rava on this topic. It says, Haiman de kabel iske min chavre, regarding someone who receives an iske, takes merchandise from someone else, and he says he's going to sell it and he'll split the profits, upasted, and he actually suffers a loss. Now, tarach umalye v'loy oidei. Now, actually, the worker felt bad that it's a loss. So he actually went and he put in the effort. He actually invested from his own money. And he ended up making a profit. But he did this all without notifying the owner of the merchandise that he had actually originally suffered a loss and then only later regained a profit by investing his own money again and working harder on that. So says Rava, Leimotzi Amalei. Now, in retrospect, now, later on, the worker cannot tell the owner after he supplemented and then worked and made a profit that dori mihayich pseid badoi, that you should have to share with me half the original losses that we really had, because we really originally had a loss. I didn't tell you. I don't want to notify you that. But this that I'm walking with a profit was only a later point in time. So first you share with me half the losses that I originally had, and then you could share with me the profits only 1/3, which ultimately ends up taking away from the principle of the owner. And that says Rabbi, he can't say that. Mishum da amale, because the owner could tell him, Lahochi tarachta lamal yusir. That's why you put in the effort to supplement, so that you shouldn't get a bad reputation that don't hire this guy, because this guy makes you lose out on business deals. So for the fact that you didn't tell me, obviously you were embarrassed, and it was obviously with your intention that you wanted to first supplement the principle that there should be no loss of principle and then make a profit. Therefore, I'm not responsible to pay you back and share that losses, but rather just take from the profit that you're coming back with at the end. Vama Rava, Rava says another halach on this topic of iska. It says, Hani beitrei, the avdi iska behadi adadi. Two people that both received an iska, the two partners received merchandise from a third guy, from the owner, in a partnership, that they should sell and do business with this money until a designated time. and then they'll split it amongst themselves, together with the owner, according to the laws of Iska. Now, V'ravach, and they actually only halfway through the time period that they had made up with the owner of the merchandise, they already had made a lot of money. So, one of the partners said to the other one, so let's go ahead, let's split up. If the other partner tells him, no, narvach tfei, let's first make more money, the law is that he could hold back the other partner until it reaches the time limit that they had made up with the owner, that then they're going to return his part and then they're going to split the profits. He's allowed to tell him, no, let's not split up yet, I want to take it all the way till the end. Now, on that, the Gemara goes and explains, why is it, in any situation, that the partner, the remaining partner, can tell him, no, I don't want you to split up yet. As the Gemara explains, because if, let's say, the one who wants to split up tells him, look, give me half the profits. In other words, the principle that we had borrowed from this guy, let that stay over here so that we could continue investing with it and making money with it up until the designated time. But the profits that we already made, let's split that now. And that Amalei, that's the remaining partner could tell him, no. The profit that we made is indebted, is responsible for the principal, because maybe we're going to continue investing, and we're actually going to lose from the principal that we had borrowed. We need that profit that we had to use it to reinvest, to make more money with it, in case we lose the principal, to have to supplement the principal. So we can't even split the profits yet. That's indebted to the principal that we had borrowed. And I won't take that to the end. Now, the Yomalei, so if the partner wants to leave, tells him, okay, give me half the profits and half the principal. In other words, let's totally split up. Amalei, so the remaining partner could tell him, no. Iska lahadadi mashubad. This iska that we had taken from the owner, the two halves are indebted one to the other. In other words, if we're going to split up, maybe I'm going to lose money on the merchandise that I'm going to buy with. However, I had already accepted to work with these things until the designated time. And if I'm going to lose, maybe the other half, which you're taking, is going to gain, which is supposed to supplement this half. And we had both taken up that initiative together, and therefore it's not fair for you to go out and take that half. Maybe that half is going to work, and my half is not going to, and it's supposed to be all pulled together. Now, v'yamalei, and if, let's say, the partner wants to leave, tells him, okay, fine. Look, niflig ravcha, niflig karna. Let's split up the profits. Let's split up the principal. Let's totally separate. Now, v'yimotelach pseidin. Now, if your problem is that maybe you're going to have a loss, you're going to say, and it's supposed to be, one is supposed to cover for the other, but I'm going to make on mine, you're going to lose on yours. Don't worry. Darina badach. I'll take the loss with you. I want to do my own thing. And you want to do your own thing. You're worried about a loss? Don't worry. If you lost, I'll cover with it. I'll split the loss that you'll have with you. And that Amalei, still the remaining partner, can tell him, Loi, no. Mazel de betray, the mazel, the heavenly, divine, the inspiration, or the shefa, the outpouring that comes from a person's consolation is better when there's two people. So the fact that even if you'll supplement, it's not going to help me because we're going to do better when we work together, which Teza points out, really regarding all these other claims, you could have used this joker, this trump card of Mazel Beitrei, but each one wanted to say even better than that, more specific and unique to that circumstance. But yeah, that's always what he tells him, that Mazel Beitrei Odif, I'd rather have exactly two people working, not just one. Nothing more continues with the next Mishnah. Continuing the theme of this parak of Makabel Tzad Mechaber, if someone works in another, he rents someone else's field, which we'll explain, as we said from Rapap on the previous staff, that each Mishnah now till the end is applying either to Chachiris or Arisas, but not to both. So someone rents someone else's field, v'leirotz l'nachish. He doesn't want to weed out from the produce that's growing. V'hamaloi, moreover, this Kabbalan says to the owner, Ma'ech beslach, what does it make a difference to you? Since anyways I'm giving you your rent, I made up that I'm going to give you a certain amount of kur of grain per year. So what's the difference if I'm going to lose my portion because the weeds are going to weaken the grain that I'm growing? That's my loss. What does that have to do with you? And that says the Mishnah, that ain't shemilei. We don't listen to the chaycher. Now, as Rashi points out, that this halacha would obviously only apply to chachrenusa, which is that you give a certain amount of rent to the owner. Because if we were talking about kablanis, meaning arisas, sharecropping, obviously can't tell him that, because what do you mean, ma'ech beslach? Of course it makes a difference. I get a certain portion of the profits, and if you can leave the weeds, it's going to ruin the whole crop, and I'm going to get less. So obviously the chiddush is even only, it's talking about the case of chachiris. And still we don't listen to the renter. Why? Because the owner could tell to the renter, you're right, you'll pay me the rent which you have to pay me anyway. But lamachrat the yaitzim imenu tomorrow, meaning next season, you're going to leave. And now the fact that you didn't weed, all those weeds are going to grow again the next season, and it's going to cause a loss for me. And therefore, we don't listen to him, and he has to weed it. If that's the minik, if that's the halacha that you have to weed, then you have to weed it, even if it's going to be a loss for this season only for him, but next season it's going to be a loss for the owner. Now the Gemara explains this halacha, the Mishnah, why we don't listen to the chaycher, to the renter, who says, I don't want to weed. So on that, the Gemara explains. If he tells him, that is the renter tells the owner, what's your problem? I'm not weeding. At a later time, after I finish the season and I do all the reaping, then I'll plow the field. Now, the point of plowing after the reaping season is that it turns over all the roots of the weeds that are left over there, and they die, and then the weeds will not grow the next season. So what will the owner respond in that situation? Amalei, he could still tell him, no, chitim al yasabina. I want that you made up in this chakiris, in this this rental, that you're going to give me a certain amount of wheat for the season. I want, since you're going to be giving me from the wheat of the field that you're renting from me, I want that they should be healthy and not weak. But if you can leave the weeds, yes, you'll end up getting rid of the weeds for the next season. But for this season, the grain is going to be poor. I don't want that you should be paying me with poor bundles of wheat. I want you to weed it during the season. Now, and if the renter says, look, you want good wheat, I won't take from the field that I'm working for you. I'll go ahead and I'll buy wheat from you from the marketplace. And then you'll get your strong wheat. I just don't want the weed. Amalei, still the landowner could tell him, no. I want this chachiris that you made up to give me a certain bundles of the wheat from my land. I want my own. I don't want you to buy me from somewhere else. And if I need you to weed so that they come out strong. Now, v'yamalei, and if the renter tells him, look, fine. Menachishna loch shir manzich. I'll weed in the field the amount of the profit that you're supposed to be getting from the field in the sharecropping. That's, in other words, that I owe you from the share of the chachiris. That I'm gonna that amount I'll weed, but the rest I won't, because that's supposed to be my loss, not yours. Amalei, still the landowner can tell him that no. You're going to give a bad name to my field, because those who see are going to think that you weeded the whole field, and still they can see the field is full of weeds. You're going to give a bad name for my land, because tomorrow, I mean, next season, when I'm going to come to sell the field, or I'm going to try to get another sharecropper when you're not here anymore, no one's going to want to work the field and say, oh, that guy's field, forget about it, it was full of weeds. Now, they're not going to know, because you just didn't do the weeding. Therefore, even if you're going to weed my part, no, I need you to weed the whole entire field. Now, this interpretation of the reasoning why he could tell him, I need you to weed, which the Gemara had said different reasons, the Gemara has, but what's not? But we learned in our Mishnah actually only said one complaint, one deciding factor, why we don't listen to the renter, and it seems like that's the defining reason, is b'mnei shemalas lifnei asavim, because the owner could tell him, next year, the weeds that you took out, they're just going to grow next year, right? For this year, it doesn't make a difference, because you're going to give me how much you owe me anyway, but next year I'm going to have weeds when you're gone already. So then why did we say all these different reasons? That is because of bad name, or because I want healthy wheat. It's just regarding because he's going to have wheat next year. So Ella, rather, Gemara says, you're right. Like we said in the Mishnah, Mishim de Amalei, it's because the landowner could tell to the renter, Bizra de Nafal Nafal. The seed that falls. In other words, you're right, his whole complaint is only because of the weeds that are going to grow the coming year. And that is a complaint that's in all situations. Because even if, let's say, the renter tells him, fine, I'll plow it after the reaping, on that, the owner could tell him, no. Because even though when you're going to be plowing after the season, you're going to be uprooting the roots of the weeds that are currently in the field, but ultimately, these weeds, since you let it stay here throughout the planting season, so those seeds of the weeds are going to fall into the ground, and then they're going to sprout the coming year. For that, plowing doesn't help. Plowing just rips out the current weeds, but the seeds of the weeds that fell into the ground are going to then grow next season. I need you to weed it now before it grows seeds to fall into the ground, because once it falls, it fell, and it's going to grow next year again. And that's why that is what's called the Chuba Netzachas, that he could tell the renter that he wants him to weed, and he has to weed. Next Mishnah continues on these halachas of Mekabel Sadeh Mechaver. Someone rents a field from his friend. V'loy asasa. Now, it didn't produce that much produce, only a little bit. And therefore the sharecropper, although he paid money to rent the field, and then he's sharing the profits with the owner and himself, he says, I don't want to work the field anymore. It's just not worth my effort. It's just, you know, it's a lemon. I lost the money. Fine. Now, the thing is that, okay, he's going to lose the money that he invested, but the owner was supposed to get a share of the profits. Now, he's not getting anything because the worker is walking away. He'll lose, but now the owner's going to lose. So says the Mishnah, Im yesh ba kedei, if there is to make produce enough that lahamed kri, that will be able to stand up a pile of grain. The Gemara will explain what that measurement is. But if there's enough that you could have a pile of grain, chayv lo tapalba, then even against his will, the sharecropper has to continue because of the contract that he had with the owner, has to continue working the field. Now, as Rashi points out, this halacha is obviously only by what we call arisus, sharecropping, kablonis, because if it's machachranis, then what does that have to do with the landowner if he's going to stop working the field? Ultimately, the renter has to pay him the amount that he made up he's going to rent with him anyway. It doesn't make a difference what it produces. So obviously, he's talking about arisus. So he has to be involved in this production, even if it barely produces, as long as it produces enough to make a pile of grain. Now, Amr Behuda, he disagrees with the Tanakhama. He says, my kitzvah bekri, what's this set amount that the Tanakhama is saying with a pile of grain? How can you set that as a set amount to say that he has to be involved with the field, that you're equating a large field with a small field? How could it be the same amount to see if it qualifies that it's producing a large field? It's going to be much different to see if it's producing for a pile, if that's the same pile as in the small field. Now, rather, Rabbi Yehuda gives a different qualification, Mesh b'kedei nefila. If there is enough that if it would produce, and then you'd be able to take the produce that it produced to use that for planting purposes, not for consumption purposes, but to use what was produced and use that to seed it from this produce to grow it for the next year, if there's enough of that, then you have to go ahead and continue working this year. Even though this year is essentially not going to be valuable, but it's going to make enough seeds to use to plant for the next year, then you have to continue. And that's what it means, yesh ba kedei nefila. The word nefila is from what's called mapilis yad, which is the amount of seed that's used to spread out. They would take the seeds and throw it onto the ground. That's yesh ba kedei nefila. If there's enough grain that's going to grow that you can use it to seed the field for the next year, then you have to continue working the field. Now the Gemara brings a braisa, Tanabon, that elaborates on this opinion of the Tanakama. The Braisa says, a makabel sada mechaveh v'lo yasasa. If someone went and he rented the rights to be a sharecrop in this guy's field, and it didn't produce nothing, not much is coming out. Says the Braisa, im yesh bo kedei lahamid kri, but if there's enough of the grain that it's going to grow, that you can make a pile out of it, then chayv l'tabel, but then you have to continue working the field. Shekach kaisaboy, because as the Braisa brings, because that's actually what he writes to him. The words of the sharecropper are, ano oikim, the honor. I will get up and I will plow. The zara ve'achatzid, I will sow and I will reap. The amar ve'edish, and I will gather the bundles together and I will thresh it. The idri, and I will winnow the chaff with the pitchfork or with the shovel that separates the chaff from the grain. The oikim kariu kadamach, and I will establish. I will set up a pile in front of you. So you see, that's the defining criterion that I'll have a kri. V'teisi ant, v'titel palga, and the rest of the contract of the sharecropping says, and you'll come and you'll take half, because it's your field. V'ano, and me, says the sharecropper, he writes, v'amoli, u'benafkes yodai, through my effort and through the expenses that I'm expending, palga, I'll take the other half. So you see that the defining characteristic, says the Tana the Braisa, is that he's going to set up a pile. So if there's enough for a pile, so then he has to keep his end of the contract. So ask the Gemara, v'kama kedei lahamid bakri, how much grain is that, so you know, that's called that you can make a pile out of it, that you if you can make that much, you have to continue doing your work. So Amar Yisrael Chanina says, Kedesh Tamid by Harachas. If it's enough that this rachas, which is this shovel that they would use to winnow, that they would throw up the grain into the air, which would separate the chaff from the grain, if you could take that shovel and have it stand, if you shove it into the pile, inside the pile, the shovel will stay standing. That's enough grain to be considered making a pile that the worker has to continue working for the duration of his contract. Now, Ibailu, the following question relating to this halacha. Let's say rachas hayetzim hagis lahagis. Let's say you have a shovel that when you push it into the pile, it stays there, but you could see the edges of the shovel from either side of the pile. My, what's the halacha? So the Gemara Tashma coming here, Amr Bavo, he had said, Ledidi Mefarshli Menei de Rabbi Yisrael Chanina. To me, it was explained from Rabbi Yisrael Chanina that kol she'in kainah shaloi, it has to be that as long as the kainah part, which is the scooping part of the shovel, that when you stick it into the pile of the grain, where if that, when you put it in, if it's not roye panei hachama, if it doesn't see the sun, then that's going to be considered that it means to say it stands in the pile. But the sides of the shovel, of the scooping part of the shovel, is considered part of this part called the kainah, and therefore if it was visible on the sides, that would not qualify for a big enough pile. It has to be that you can stick it in, and the whole scoop part of the shovel is not seen by the sun, meaning it's all inside the pile. But if the sides are seen, then that doesn't qualify, and if it made only that amount of grain, he wouldn't have to continue his work. Now, Itma, we learned, is actually machloik is regarding, so what is that practically in measurement of produce that we're considering the pile? So Levi Amri, he says, that's shalish saw, and that's three saw of grain. Whereas the Rabbi Amri sasaim. The yeshiva Rabbi Amri, they say it's two saw. Now, moreover, Amri Shlokesh, he says, sasaim shamri, this that the Bei Rabbi Amri said it's two saw, is chutz minat saw. That's except for the expenses, meaning first the sharecropper, besides that that's what's producing, he has to then deduct all the expenses. After the deduction of his expenses, he walks away with that the grain is walking away with a profit of two saw. That's the amount that the shovel would stay in and would not be visible on the side, then he would have to continue working for this year, for this season, which is not producing that much, but it's enough that he has to continue. Tanan Hasam. So the Gemara says, we learned within the Mishnah Masechtas Uktzin, where, as Rashi explains, the Gemara continues to Amud Beis with different teachings, because it says that we said in the halacha of our Mishnah, Amud Rabbi Yanai. So we pick all these different Mishnayos, which the Bei Rabbi Yanai also give an opinion for the shear for the measurements. So just like over here, they gave what's the shear of that it could be making a pile. So too, it brings other Mishnayos where the Bei Rabbi Yanai gives a shear what that measurement is. So you learn within the Mishnah Masechtas Uktzin that says, Pritzei Zeisim Va'anavim, which as the Gemara will shortly explain, that means to say the wicked olives and grapes, meaning to say wicked, meaning to say they never mature, because they always stay baiser. It doesn't grow and completely mature as a product. Bishame mitam. Bishame say that those grapes and olives could contract tumah. Or besil mitam, they say though that's tahar from tumas eichlin, because it's not fit to be eaten. The halacha that a food item could become tummy is only when it becomes a food item here. It never matured, so it doesn't become tummy. That asks the Gemara, my pritzei zeisim, what does it mean, the terminology that they're the perutim, the those who breach the laws, what does that mean that there are olives that are pritzei? It means rishei zeis, it means the wicked olives. Wicked means to say that it never matures, which are what wicked people are, which is that immaturity, and so too, that those are people that breach, that's what's called pritzei zeisim. Amar Rav Yosef, he says, a mikra, where does the pasuk we find that a paritz, a pritzes, relates to rishois, to being wicked? So it says a pasuk in Daniel, it says, Uvenei peritzi amcha, that the sons of the peritzim of your nation, yinastu lahamet chazoin, they attempted to establish a vision. V'nichshul, they stumbled. You see that stumbling, sinning, is relating to peritzis. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Mahachi brings a different pasuk in Yecheskel. He says, V'hailid, and will give birth to ben paritz, a son that's a paritz. Who is that? Shefech dam, someone who spills blood, a murderer. So you see that a paritz, peritzis, relates to being wicked. Now, ask the Gemara, v'kama pritzei zeisim. Now, how much could it mature and ripen and still be considered pritzei zeisim, that according to Beis Hillel, it will not be makabel tumas eichlin? So, Blazam, he says, arbas kavan lekara. If it produces four kav for the beam, in other words, what they would do is that they would take the olives or the grapes and put it into the presser, which had a beam that pressed it, which is the amount that it pressed at one time. Now, if it only produces four kav of oil, that's considered still that they never fully ripen, and that's why there's not that much oil coming out. That's still considered pritzei zeisim anavim, and it would not be makabel tumas eichlin. The Bei Rabbi Yanai Amri, they give a different measurement, and that's why introducing this Mishnah, is sasaim lekaira. They say it's two saw, which are 12 kav for the kaira, not like the way Rabbi Elazar said that's only four kav for the kaira. No, actually, the Gemara says v'loi pligi, but they're actually not disagreeing. Ha, the halacha of Rabbi Elazar that said that it's only up till four kav is ba'asur de ma'ili kura bu'ulala. It's where they only put a kur into this pile, which they call the sack, meaning there are places where that they would use the press would be very large. So they would be able to put into this large press three kur together, one shot. Now there are places where they would only put in a kur, one kur of olives in the in the press because the beams were small. So Rabbi Lazar was told when there were small presses, so the small press, you only get a kur, that's where the max is going to be considered that they were too small, were four kavim. Ha, but Rabbi Yani was told by large, but after the ma'ayli tlas the kur in ba'ullah, where they put in three kur into the press. So three kur is triple the size of the other press of Rabbi Lazar. So two saw is three times the amount of four kav, because two saw is 12 kav, which is three times four kav, so therefore that's the same measurement as Rabbi Lazar. We're continuing to the next Mishnah, again, because of measurements of that was brought from Beir Bianai. Tarabon went in the Mishnah Masech the Zavim, as the Gemara continues on to Amud Beis. Alu, if a Zav, who emits a Tumah through his male member, and a Tara person, if they go up, Be'ilon, on the tree together, Shekeichera, that's a weak tree, or Ubeseicha, or onto the branch of a tree, Shekeichera, that's very weak. So, says the Mishnah, Tumah. So the tar person now becomes tamei because he's on the same branch or tree as the zav. Now the reason for that is since the tree or the branch is weak, so it bends beneath their weight. So you have that, for example, the weight of the person that's higher up on the branch is weighing down on the one who's lower down on the branch because it's weighing down. So he's weighing down on him. So either way, either if the zav is laying, is putting his weight is on the tar person, whether if the tar person is weighing down on the zav, either way, there's a tumma with a zav. If he's carrying a tar person, or if a tar person is carrying a zav, that there is a tumma that comes through a zav, and therefore, either way, whoever's higher or lower on the branch, it's going to transmit tumma because it's considered as if the elgin is on the tachton, or that whoever is considered on the top and the bottom, whether the zav or the tumma, it's going to transmit tumma to the tar person. Now, that the Gemara asks, how do we qualify a tree that's weak? It's kol she'in bi'karin. As long as the trunk doesn't have lachik, the space to carve out in its width, a raiva, a quarter of a kav, that's considered a weaker type of a tree. And then again, that means to say that the weight of one is weighing down than the other, which again, with a zav, he transmits tumma either by carrying or when someone's carrying him. And heichadam is seicha shekeichara. How do you qualify a branch that's considered weak? So Amr Shlokesh, he says, kol she'nirba'as b'chizyayna. As long as if it would be concealed, when someone would grab hold, his fist would go around the branch, you wouldn't see the branch could be covered by his fist, that's considered a thin and weak branch, where if they're both on it, it's considered weak enough. So again, we had the Beir Bianai's measurement of, if it doesn't have, regarding the ilan, the tkoichira, that's why we introduce that Mishnah. It's not awesome. Again, another Mishnah, this time Masechta this Ahalas, again, which is going to have a shear of the Beir Bianai that qualifies it. Hamhalach bebeis apras. If someone goes in a beis apras, the pras comes from the term of broken, where if there's a field that was, there was a kever, there was a grave that was plowed over. Now there's a concern where there might be a bone the size of a barley corn, which was now spread out because they plowed over it, and then these bones of this dead person would get spread around that area, which transmits tumma if someone touches it or carries it. Now, but it does not transmit tumma if through oil, if someone just leans over it. So if someone's walking in the base of pras, al gabi avanim shayoch lahasid, on top of rocks that could be moved. In other words, there were rocks there also which weren't firmly established in the ground. And when someone walks on it, they move. Now additionally, more than that is that because it moves the rock, there might be a bone the size of a barley corn that might move because of his kicking that rock. So, or let's say if a guy who wanted to eat tyrus was riding al ha'adam b'al behema, he was riding on the person, meaning someone was giving him a ride on the shoulders, or on the animal shekeichi ra, that is weak, and he was riding on them through this beis apras, says the Mishnah says always, so tameh, the one who's riding on the person or the animal is going to be tameh. In other words, as Rashi points out, the one who's giving the ride for sure is going to be tameh, because even without his moving the rocks, he becomes tummy simply because the Rabbanan said that when you walk through a beis apras, we have to be concerned that you possibly moved a bone the size of a barley corn and you become tummy. The chiddush of this Mishnah is saying that even the one who's getting the ride, he becomes tummy. Why? Since the one who's giving him the ride, whether the animal or the person, is weak, so when the bottom, whether it be the animal or the person, kicks the rock, which makes the bone the size of the barley corn move, it's not just his weight that's doing it, because he's weak. It's the guy who's on top of him. His weight is weighing down the bottom person. That's as if the upper person is making the rock and the barley coin, the bone, the side of the barley coin, move. Because it's not the weight of the bottom person that could help and stop it. It's only if he's strong. If he's strong, it's essentially only him that's moving it because he could balance the weight of the person on top of him. So therefore, then it wouldn't be considered as if the upper weight is causing it, and therefore then the upper person wouldn't become tummy. So that's the halacha it says in the Mishnah Masechet Tzalos. That asks the Gemara, Hechidami Adam Shekoyche Ra, how do you qualify a person that's considered weak, that as if now he steps on something and he's walking, that it's the upper person's weight which is causing the bone, the size of a barley corn, to move? On that Amrish Lakish, he says, Kol Shei Reichvai, if he's riding on him, and the guy's bottom knees are knocking into each other, that means to say that he's not so strong, and then the upper person's weight is causing the rock to move the bone to make the upper person tummy. Now, how do you qualify an animal that's considered weak? That again, Amri de Berbianai is kosher reichva if he's riding on the animal, and matila glalim. So because the animal is feeling overwhelmed, it causes it to relieve itself. That is a sign that it's weaker, and then if they go through the Beis HaPras, the one who's getting the ride is going to be tummy. Another halacha, Amar de Rabbanai. Rabbanai again gives another measurement. He says, L'tfila v'l'tfilin. For the halacha is a prayer and for wearing tfilin. The measurement is dalad kavin. Regarding carrying a load, it's a measurement of 4 kav. So the Gemara says, L'tfila mahi. What's this halacha that regarding carrying a load of 4 kav, that's the max regarding tfila, regarding prayer? There's something like learning the Braisa. If someone's carrying a load on his shoulders, and it comes time for prayer, so pachis midalat kavan, if the load is less than 4 kav, so mafshin lacharev mespal, so you could throw it behind your back, you could sling it over your shoulder, and then you could daven, because the weight of that package is not going to prevent him from being able to focus in his davening. But arba kavan, if it's 4 kav, then maniach agabe karka mespal, then you have to put it down on the ground and daven. So the measurement for tefillah is, if it's 4 kav, it's already too much. Letfilin mahi, what's this measurement of 4 kav for tefillin? That's kind of like learning the braisa. Hayinaisa masa al reishay betfilin bereishay. Someone's carrying a load on his head, and moreover, he had tefillin on his head. So ima yitfilin reit, it says, if his tefillin was getting crushed beneath the load that he had on his head, then also that's forbidden to do. Vimla, but if let's say not, because the load was light, or it wasn't weighing down on that part of the head which has the tefillin, then the mutter then is permitted. On that, says the Braisa, be'eza masa amr, regarding with what type of load were we saying that would be considered crushing the tefillin, that's b'masa shel arba'as kav, and that's a load of 4 kav, that's what he said for tefillin, if it's 4 kav, it's too much, it's going to weigh down the tefillin, and that's not respectful, and therefore you have to put it down on the ground. Now, Tan Reb Chiya, the Reb Chiya taught a Braisa related to these halachas of tefillin. Hamaitzi zevel al reishay v'tfilin bereishay. Someone's taking garbage out on his head, fertilizer, and he has tfilin on his head. So that's not appropriate. Now, says Reb Chiya, hareza lo yisalkim litzdadin. You can't move the tfilin to the side. Moreover, v'leikshrim b'mustad. You can't just tie it onto your waist, onto your loins, and have it hanging over there. And they should naig ben mining b'zayim, because that's acting in a disgraceful manner to the tfilin. Aval, but kaishrim al zizrayi b'mukin tfilin. What you could do is, you could tie the tfilin shal reish onto your hand next to the tefillin shel yad and wrap it over there, and that's respectful enough to do because you're carrying something on your head which you can't have at the same end of the tefillin. You could wrap it on your arm. Now, Mishum debei Shila Amru, in the name of the yeshiva of Shila, they said that no, afilu mitfacha shelen, even the kerchief which is used to wrap the tefillin in the nighttime, even that is aslanich, it's forbidden to put on the head as a load, ala raish, on the head, sheesh betfillin, that has tefillin on it. Meaning at the time when you're wearing tefillin, when the tefillin is in its place. And that the Gemara says v'kama. How much is that considered a load that it's forbidden to put on the head according to the Beirib Shila? So Mabai says, because how much is that container that you put the tefillin at night, that kerchief? So Mabai says, afila rivad pumbadisa. Even a quarter of a quarter litra of pumbadisa, which is very little, even that, like we see from the mitpachas, that you're not allowed to put on the head at the same time as the tefillin, even that you can't put on the head at the same time. If it's not designated, like something like a hat, you can't put that on the head at the same time as the tefillin. Now, what we explained up until now in the Mishnah was the halacha of the Tanakama, who said that's the amount of making a pile, which we said you could keep a shovel in there that's not seen. That is the amount that you have to continue working, even though it's not producing that much, as a sharecropper. On that, the Mishnah said, the Amr Yehuda, he disagrees. He says, my kids for Bakri. What does this mean? You make a set amount for a pile of grain, no matter how big or small the field is. Ella rather disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, "Im yesh bekedei nefila, if there's enough to, like we said in the Mishnah, ma'pilis yad, if there's enough to plant the field, then if you can have that much grain, which then you could use that grain as seed to plant it for the next year, then you have to continue working the field." So on that, the Gemara asks, "Kama kedei nefila, how much is necessary to plant the field?" So Rabbi Ami said in the name of Rabbi Yechon, it's arba soin, it's four sa' of seed. That's lukur, that's for an area of land, which if you planted it, would produce a kur. That's how the Marsha, that those who amend Rashi, which Rashi says that's 1,500 amas in the length by 50 amas in the width, where Taisus explicitly says it like this, where it's a place where it's fit to sprout a kur, and it only grew four saw, which that's the amount of planting, if you get that much. If let's say it didn't end up producing the core, it actually only produced four saw, which is enough that if you replant that, it's going to make a core. That's enough that you have to continue working according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Ami Dilei Amar. Now that was what Rabbi Ami said in the name of Rabbi Yechon, but actually Rabbi Ami himself said that it's actually shmeinas saw in the core. It's actually, whereas the Gemara will explain that in the years of Rabbi Ami, you had to plant eight saw to sprout a core. So it's if you plant eight saw and you get a core, so it's that amount, if you get eight saw for per core, that amount of what actually ends up growing, which actually come out of a core, but you actually get only the amount that if you would take that grain and plant it, would make that amount for the next year, then you have to continue working. Now, on that, the Gemara explains, Amalei Ahu Saba L'Rav Chama Bereid D'Rabba Bar Avua. There was a certain elder that said to Rav Chama, the son of Rabba Bar Avua, said, Azbalach, I'll explain to you that it's not that Rabbi Ami was disagreeing with his Rebbe, Rabbi Yechanan. It's actually just that the world keeps on degenerating. B'shneid Rabbi Yechanan Habashmein Na'ar, in the years of Rabbi Yechanan, the earth was fatty, the earth was robust, and there was enough to get a sprouting of a kur by planting four saw. But in the years of Rabbi Ami already, the next generation, the earth got weaker, and it already required eitza to be able to get a kor of produce. So again, if you, in that area of a kor, instead of getting a kor, you get actually the amount back of how much is necessary to use that exact amount to replant it to get for the next year, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's considered enough that the sharecropper has to continue working. Mer continues with a related discussion. It's not awesome. We learned it within the Mishnah Masechtas Peya, where the related is just because of the terminology of kedei nefila, although they mean very different things in the context. We learned the Mishnah Masechtas Peya, haruach shepizra es ha'oimen. If the wind blew the bundles of sheaves that there were in the field, which belonged to the landowner, which ended up covering over the leket with the gleanings that fall to the ground, which belonged to the poor people, which were spread around the whole field, wherever they dropped one, dropped two over here. Now, since the bundles, the wind blew it all over, we don't know how many leket, which were these gleanings, which fell from the ground, which belonged to the poor people, are laying beneath the bundles. So we don't know how much should be going to the poor people now. So says the Mishnah, Oimdim Isa. So we evaluate, in other words, the court comes and they evaluate, Kama leket ruilasis. How much leket, how much gleanings was this field fit to make every single year? And that's how much, after they evaluate how much gleanings it makes sense this field would have, and they give that amount to the poor person. He says, no, you don't need an evaluation, because there is already a set amount. He says, you give to the paupers the amount of set leket that is fit to fall, which the Gemara is going to shortly explain, become a kedei nefila. How much, again, although it's the same words, it means very different things. In the previous context, kedei nefila was of the term of ma'pilas yada, of throwing the seeds and planting, how much necessary to plant. Here it's talking about kedei nefila of how many gleanings normally would fall down, and that's a set amount. So that the Gemara says, kiyas rav dimi, amr b'loza b'item, and some say, rabbi yichanan, that's arba kavan l'kor. So although it's actually the same, similar wording, there was arba saf or kor. Here what we're talking about is that for every core, it makes sense that there's going to be four kaven of leket, which that's the proportion, that's the ratio that you got to give to the poor people, now that we don't know how much leket there actually was. Bayer Birmiya asked, this that we said that it's for every core, it's four kav, is it lekor zera? In other words, for a field that if you were planting a core of seed, that amount of that field, you give four kav to the pauper, oilakur tvua, or meaning for a field where you're gathering a core of grain. So is it The core that we're measuring is that how much seed was planted in this field, and which obviously grows much more, and that's how much you give four kaf to the poor person, or is actually four kaf, or is it actually a core of the produce, which was what you're gathering, that's which was finally from what you planted, that's how much you're getting, and that amount of the final product, proportionately, you give four kaf to the poor person. Now, if you're going to say that it's proportionate to the core zera, if you plant a core of seed, then you give four kaf to the pauper, is that lamat poilas yad? So how much planting of a core, is it according to how much you plant by hand, or according to how much is planted when you use oxen? In other words, there are certain places where they would plant the produce by hand. And there are some places that they would actually put the seed in the on the wagon that had holes in it, and they would have the oxen take this wagon over the plowed areas, and the seed would fall by itself. Now, you need to have a lot more seed if you're planting through oxen more than you do by hand, because it's more indiscriminate and just flies all out. So the question was, regarding a field that it's you're planting a core through a hand planting, is that how we evaluated that leket is going to be four kaf? Or is it a core of zera for when the oxen plant, when then you're going to need much more? Did we say that in that situation is when you're going to give that proportion of a four kaven to the poor person? So Zigmar Toshima. So let's answer the questions. Chiyas Rav and Amr Bavo Amr Balazu. He says Amrilan. Some say it's Amr B'Yechanan that Arbaz kaven l'kor zera. So that clearly answers the first question, where it's four kav for not a core of produce, but a core of how much seed. Now, vadayin tibaylech, but then you still have the question, when you're planting a core of zera, which is to plant a certain area, but when you're doing by hand, that's less than how much you're doing it per when you're doing by oxen, and then the ratio is going to change. So how do you evaluate it? But on that, the Gemara says, take a little stand. It's not clear how we evaluate the core of zera. Is that based on when you're doing it by hand, which you get more seed per the area, or by shvam, which you get less, and then to be able to evaluate based on that how much you give the four kaven per the core of zera. So the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Hamakabel sadeh mechaver, again, continuing on the theme of this parak, if someone rents a field from his friend, and then locust, or it gets wind blasted, which the wind comes and knocks the seeds out of the kernels out of the stalks. So the Mishnah says, "Imakas medinahi." If this is a countrywide plague, as the Gemara is going to explain what that is, so then he diminishes the amount of the rent that he has to pay to the landowner. Now, as Rashi points out, as we already said from Rapop in the previous daf, that all these Mishnahis, which besides the first two Mishnahis, apply either to only rental, which are called Chachranas, or only to sharecropping, which are called Arisas or Kablanas, this Mishnah obviously is only by Chachranas. Because if it was talking by sharecropping, then why would you be diminishing the amount of the rent? It's whatever it is that the proportion of the profits, that's how they split it. So that's going to be whatever he gets less, so the owner also gets less. He wouldn't be diminishing anything on that end. So this is talking about by a rental. The rental, this is not getting what he had paid for. The product is much less because of something that was a statewide travesty, so he could diminish the amount of the rent that he owes him. But this is not a global epidemic, it's just something that happened to this guy's field, then he cannot diminish the amount of rent because the landowner could tell him, your mazel caused it. This was obviously something related to you because you are in charge of it now, you rented it, and didn't happen anywhere else, so it's not my responsibility, it's your loss. Now, Rabbi Huda, he says, if he accepted the rental based on money, not on the product of the produce of the field that he was going to pay him the set amount of rent, then says Rabbi Yehuda, benkech benkech, then either way, even if it was a makas medina, he cannot diminish the amount of the rent. Because there was no decree from Shemayim on monies, it was only on, even if a makas medina, on all the fields, which is not unique to this person, and you could say it's the loss of the landowner, here, where the landowner is getting paid in money, obviously that was not, the punishment was on, not on money, it was on the fields. So if they made up to give him money, so then that the landowner doesn't have to take the loss anymore, it's going to be the loss of the renter. So the Gemara says, Hechad Domei Makas Medina, how do we qualify a countrywide plague? What is a Makas Medina? So Amr Yehudi says, Kigain de Yishadif Ruba de Bag. He says, as long as the majority of this valley where this guy's field is, so if the majority of them had this problem of the locust, or let's say it's wind blasted, then that's considered Makas Medina, where he could discount from the rent. Ulam, he gives a different qualification. He says, Kigain Shenishtatfu Arba Sadis Ma'abru Chesau. As long as the four fields on either side of this field, they all had the problem, that's considered Makas Medina and not his own individual problem. So then the renter could pay less on his rent. Now, Amar Ula said, related to this interpretation of Ula, Ba'ibim Marabba, they had the question in the West in Eretz Yisrael as follows. Nishtadif Telem, if let's say only one row of the planting, meaning on one aruga, one row of the field, if let's say Nishtadif Telem Echad, one row, and not more than that, from the fields around him, Alpanei Kula, from all the fields that surround him, they were Nishtadif, they were wind blasted. My, what's the halacha in that case? Ultimately, all the four areas around him are wind blasted, but it's not the whole field. All the fields were not. They actually, nothing happened to those fields. But that one row at the edge of each field were wind blasted or had the locust. What would the halacha be in that case? Well, let's say the reverse. Let's say Nishtayr Tel Mechad Al Panei Kula. Let's say actually all those fields around him actually were Nishtadif, including this field. But the last row that they have, which surrounded the perimeter of this guy's field, were not wind blasted. Now, what's Allah in that case? Do we say that since ultimately there was one row around his fields in that perimeter that didn't get ruined, so you can't call that a Makas Medina, must be his mazel, because right beyond his field were not wind blasted? Or do you say that no, that little remnant that each one of those fields around them had left over that last row is not significant enough because their own fields were ruined? Afsika Beira. What's if, let's say, there was a fallow field that separated between his field and the other wind-blasted fields around him, where if there were four fields on either side of him that were these sadebur, that were not planted, and all the other fields beyond those four fields were wind-blasted. My, what's Allah in that situation? Do we say, ultimately, the four fields around them were not nishtaf, and therefore it must be his mazel? Or do you say that no, that if they would be planted, they would have been nishtaf, because you could see any field beyond that was wind-blasted, therefore it was only nothing happened because they were sadebur, but if they were planted, therefore it is a Makas Medina. So the Gemara continues asking, aspasta. So let's say the fields around them were planted what's called shachas, which are for animal food, and they weren't wind blasted, and they separated between all the other fields that also were nishtadif, and including this renter's field. As the Gemara continues, the top of Gavav Manalef, my, what's the halacha? Do we say that ultimately the four fields around them were not nishtadif, and therefore it's not a Makas Medina? Or do we say that he could tell them no? Had they been planted with tavu, with produce, then it would have been wind blasted. It's only because it was the shachas, this little animal stuff, that's why nothing happened to them. So the Gemara continues, even if you're going to say that aspasta is not a hefsik, because that wasn't included in the decree of the punishment, which was only on tavua, because he could tell them that had it been produce, it would have been wind blasted. But on that, the Gemara continues asking, zera achermai. What's the halacha if, let's say, there was other types of seed, not what he had planted, some other type of seed? Would that be considered a hefsik? Do we say that if that's considered something else, in other words, by aspasta, we say it's not a hefsik, and you could say that if the fields beyond that, which are just like his, are ruined, so too it's considered Makas Medina. Let's say the fields right around him were something else, which were not ruined, but all the other fields beyond it were just like his field, and they were ruined. Do you say that if it's a different seed, it's different, and therefore it's not going to be, it's not going to take away from the Makas Medina? Or do we say that it is? We see the fields were not ruined around them. So too, moreover, even if you're going to say that Zera Acher would be a Hefsik, Chiti Legabe Sa'orim, Ki Zera Acher Dami Arloi. But let's say wheat, in contrast to barley, is that considered like a different seed, where therefore that would not reflect poorly on the Makas Medina? In other words, you could still say that if all the other types, which are that same type, were ruined, so to his field is included in that Makas Medina? Or do we say that no, they're not considered like different minim, and therefore, even if it's barley or wheat, the other field, and they weren't ruined, so it must be just something unique to him. Moreover, the last question on this is Kala Olam Kuli B'Shadaf and B'Shalei B'Yirakin. Let's say actually everyone's fields in got ruined, but everyone else in the world was through wind blasted, and his was through yellowing, which is a different type of affliction to the crop. Or Inam Kala Olam Kuli B'Yirakin B'Shalei B'Shadaf, and everyone else's crop got yellowed and got just wilted away, and his were because it got wind blasted, wind blew it, and that's how it ruined it. My, what's halacha? Do we say that it's Makas Medinik has happened to everyone, or do we say that no, because everyone was something else, and you were something unique? So therefore the landowner could tell the renter it was your bad mazla, and it's not something that was universal, which therefore the landowner has to take responsibility for. So I'm going to take a little stand regarding all these questions, if they would be considered Makas Medina, and therefore then he could deduct from the amount of the rent, or that no, it's something unique to his mazla, that okay, you rented it and happened just to you, and therefore he has to still pay the old rent and take the loss himself.